Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Georgie Courage-Cole, Sherlock's founder and CEO, and welcome to today's Sherlock's Middle East in Conversation With podcast. I am quite literally buzzing to be sitting here with Ruth. It's Bradley, not Bradshaw,
yes.
But freaking hell, I mean, you could be a cousin, a twin.
Totally.
I mean, of the wonderful
it's
Carrie, you've got the magic.
Bradley, Bradders,
okay.
Any of the above.
We need to get Ruth to kind of recreate that, you know, running across the street, but an Elster girl in a pink tutu. That would be fantastic. I think we need to do that.
I'm not in my heels phase anymore. That was definitely
my 20s. You can put your own twist on it.
Romana Nazim, equally as fabulous and inspiring, founder of The Edit. Also based in Al-Sakal. These two are neighbours.
We're neighbours.
I've got real FOMO.
I don't see enough of her. She travels too much.
I'm never here.
She's
I've
never
been here for a month though.
The Edit is a wonderful, wonderful concept store with a phenomenal edit. Sustainability at the heart. If you haven't been, go and check it out. Our team went. They were in there for blooming hours. I was like, where the hell are you? They're like, we're still in The Edit. Anyway, ladies, thank you for joining me today. We've got so many to talk about. What did you have for breakfast? That was my icebreaker. I'm interested.
I don't eat breakfast. I had a green tea. I had like 3 mugs of green tea.
Jesus. When did you last eat then?
Well, last night. What time did I eat? I think about 7, 8. I mean, I'm not intermittent fasting. I just don't have breakfast. Not a big breakfast person.
Well, I am. I just have banana. They called it banana bread.
Yeah.
Like it toasted. I was like, can we be clear? This is a piece of cake.
But you know what it is? It's like when everyone went through that phase during COVID. I went through this phase of baking banana bread.
I made sourdough.
I made banana bread. And then I realized there's no such thing as banana bread. It's all cake.
Well, I had a lovely breakfast. I went to Surf House. On the beach.
Is this nice place in Dubai?
Yeah, it's really great. It's where my daughter works as a surf coach, and it's just lovely. It's where people rent out surfboards. It's right next to the sea. It's straight across the highway from here, so it's near the Burj Al Arab. It's right next to Surf Beach, so it's the main surf spot because that's where all the surfers go on Surf Beach. It's the only main place you can surf in Dubai. Otherwise, you'd have to go for Jeddah or Oman. And they have a lovely cafe there, and we did a farewell breakfast for my daughter.
Well, I'm just saying, I am a huge crier. When other people cry, I cry, and I might look like a tough whatever, but I'm actually quite softy. So Ruth is digging deep.
Today is going to be a tough day, yes.
So I just had my son's American, his brother is married to an American, just had her and her two friends from college, they're from Ole Miss in the south, staying with me in London, and his niece is 18, 19. I was like, Jesus. The idea of cocoa in 5 years. Going to
I think
the
distance is worrying me a bit.
Yeah,
it's obviously very far.
God, it's going to be cocoa. And she was like, I know it's really sad, but it's also amazing to see them spread their wings and become their own people. And I was like, oh, that's such a lovely way.
Yeah, and she's done that to a certain extent because she left home at 15.
I'm trying to make you feel better.
the wings have spread.
She went to the UK when she was 15 to go to college to study marine biology. So she's already done that. What worries me now is that education is very different to just basically being on a jolly. It's incredible.
She's a go-getter. World, and she'll come back to you.
Yeah, so today's going to be a tough day. I'll hold it together. I'll be strong.
Dig deep. Can we just do a quick what you're wearing? Because, I mean, I'm like, the jewellery, the gold, the silver. My team were talking to me about these bracelets.
I want to go to The Edit and buy these bracelets.
So do I.
They're
together.
Amazing.
So this is one of my favourite jewellery brands called Misho. And the founder, Suhani, she's amazing. She's become a really good friend. She's based in London. I should actually connect you guys. The brand is fully sustainable. So it's gold plated. And she just does really cool, unique pieces that are like minimal, but they've got like quite a bit of a, you know, an impact. You know, I've been exploring mixing metals as well.
Oh my God. For listeners, not viewers. Diets.
It's yeah, aren't they lovely? But I like how she mixes the two together.
Oh my Lord. I love that I'm mid-podcast.
Is she exclusive to you in Dubai?
In Dubai, yes. Yeah. And her price point is amazing. Mm. It's really accessible price points.
Oh, my
so
God,
I love her
so
stuff.
Yeah, these are lovely.
And those rings, are they her too?
Yeah, they're all, everything I'm wearing is Misha.
Oh. So what sort of price are these bracelets?
I'm not sure what the exact price, but I think they're around the 1,000 dirham mark.
So that's about 200 pounds.
Yeah, 200 pounds.
Sorry. Wow, they are, oh my God, I might just have to swing by the edit.
Actually, this is also from the edit. This is two sisters from London called, the brand's called Usisi Sisters. I think they grew up maybe in Africa, but they are English and they're based between other places in London. And again, a fully sustainable brand, but they do these like incredibly, you know, very chic and elegant styles, but in slightly different, you know, with slightly different elements.
Can we just have a quick moment for your nails? Because we always get asked this. So let's put it out there so that we don't have to answer these questions on your behalf. What color are you wearing and what is it?
It's a crimson red. I think it's called...
they're looking for a brand and they're looking for a name.
Okay. So these are gelish and I believe the color is called Bloodline.
Excellent.
At tips and toes.
Wonderful. Brilliant.
If you can't find it, look for couture.
Okay. Can we also have the lip, please?
Oh, I mean, we need the lip.
This is the stuff we get. When we put out a podcast in the UK, people are like, okay, Georgie, nail colour, please. Nail colour.
NARS. I don't know the colour, but it's in my bag.
Is it the liquid matte?
It's the liquid matte.
I'm obsessed with it.
Mm. Can we do shirt? Like, you're
vintage today.
You actually hit us with purple when we walked
in. I do.
Which you can't really see now.
No.
But
I think we need I'm actually wearing a vintage Jasper Conran suit.
Are you?
Yes. But I've paired it. It's a lovely little jacket, which is very thin and easy to wear in this kind of climate. But yeah. I've paired it with a Bagessa shirt, which is from their new resort collection, which is my very last purchase until 2025, because I've set myself a challenge.
Have you?
Really? Not to spend one penny on clothes in 2024.
But you can spend it on earrings.
Accessories are not included in that challenge.
Excellent. Yes. I actually think...
Otherwise, Romana would be very upset with me. I bought this in December. Actually, Amrita was with me because we were both invited to the resort collection at the end of December.
Yeah.
And so I technically bought this in 2023, but it only arrived yesterday. But it's...
Well, it's really cool. I love
it. Yeah, it's her new resort collection. And I'm super happy that the very last thing that I will have bought until 2025 is supporting a local designer.
Yeah. We are such fans
of this. Really makes me happy.
I actually had my shoes laid out in my hotel room. I was like, oh, I'm a bit embarrassed.
No, I'm some of the shoes.
And then I put my Zara jeans on and I was like...
I bought some denim from her as well. She has the best denim jeans.
I was going to wear a Bagessa skirt today.
Yeah. I was going to wear a Bagessa
skirt. I love...
Where are you?
I love
her
brand.
There we go.
I love her brand so much.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
She's also like the nicest person. Yeah.
Her brand is very cool.
But I decided not to include jewellery in that. So I am... At the moment, I am including shoes and bags. So it's clothes, shoes and bags. So the idea is I'm going to shop my own wardrobe or only buy vintage. That's the deal. So
the key is planning.
No new...
Would you rent?
No, I wouldn't. I don't see myself as a renter.
The key is planning and going...
I have too much stuff. I'm just going to shop my own clothes.
Going in there and looking for a piece you love, working out.
Yeah.
You haven't worn for 3 years and then going, how am I going to make that relevant now? And what with I think is actually really fun, isn't it?
It's super fun.
The Conran suit is a perfect example because I've probably had this 10 years. It was probably one of the very first things he designed, probably from one of his first collections.
Love it. Ladies, for people listening that don't know you, can you give us a bit of background? Where are you from, first of all, Romana?
I'm Indian. So I'm from the south of India, from Bangalore. Bangalore. But my parents moved here. My dad's actually celebrating his 50th year, or he did already. He's planning to write a book about his time in Dubai, which is quite sweet. He is under the illusion that I'm going to write it for him, or that he's going to have it done in a month. And I was like, no, that's not quite how it works. But yeah, they've been here for a very long time. My mom for 44 years.
And what brought you to Dubai?
I didn't have a choice. My parents did. I was born here. I just turned 37. So I was born in Dubai. I moved to London
Moved back to Dubai. I go to London very often, back and forth. We met each other recently. I'll be in London in a few weeks as well. But Dubai is very much home. But I don't know. I feel like, you know the term third culture kids?
I don't.
So
tell
me. It's about people who kind of have a third culture where you don't necessarily identify with one place in particular. And I think it's quite an interesting concept. And I've been expanding on that in the past few years in conversations with friends. But essentially, I'm Indian. But when I go to India, I don't feel like I necessarily belong.
Yeah.
I'm from Dubai, and I very strongly associate with Dubai, but I'm not Emirati. Then I go to London, and London is where I moved when I was 18. It's where I really became who I am today. And I feel it in my bones when I'm in London. I love the city so much, but I'm not English.
Yeah.
And
I guess Dubai and London are both such international cities, aren't they? I mean, there's 11% Emiratis in Dubai.
Yeah.
So you've picked the right place to...
I mean,
I moved here 20 years ago, it was 2%, by the way. 2% Emiratis made up.
And now it's growing to...
Yeah.
That's 2%.
Yeah, it was 2%.
So it was always like 9 to 10%.
No, it was very, very small. 2-3%, I think, in 2003.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was very crazy. Small.
Give us a quick sort of elevator pitch of what you did. So you were in London at 18, you studied there.
I went to law school.
Yeah. Which
I'm a lawyer.
Know. Yeah, you're a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer.
Turned fashion entrepreneur.
Turned very stressed out fashion entrepreneur.
Yeah. And so you studied in London. You ended up back here.
Ended up back here. The plan was never to live here for very long. I was always going to move to London after a year or New York. And then you know how it goes. A year turned into two, turned into three, ended up getting married. And then I feel like right now Dubai is such a great place to be. And
keeps getting better.
It just keeps getting better since the pandemic. It's the first time in my entire life I have felt like, okay, I'm actually quite happy to have my roots here for the next few years. Whereas I'm always on a plane. I'm always traveling. Yeah. And just being in Dubai, there's so much going on.
That's what Caroline Labouchere said. I saw her last night.
She's great.
She's great. She's such a character. She's English. She's in her 50s, I think in her late 50s, and she's freaking hot, and she is living her best life.
Yeah.
And actually, her energy is really inspiring. Like, if you want to feel like, you know, age is a number, she is there to prove that. And
I mean, she's phenomenal.
And she was saying, I said, have you noticed a huge change? And she said, I have, but I've grown with Dubai, and it just gets better and better. And my husband and I were here with our family at New Year. And we were sitting down and he was, I'm going to be really honest, he was always a bit like, Dubai's not for me. He'd not been here at this time. He came twice last year with me to discover it. And he said, I'm just falling for this place like you are. And I love this sort of joint energy and this, what unites everybody being sort of ambition, and everyone is here to live their best lives and to go for it.
Ever since I've been here in 2003, there has always been agents of change within the community and these third culture kids that were born and raised here might not be Emirati, but, you know, they might be Egyptian or Jordanian or some form of pan-Arab, you know, third culture kid, or Indian from the subcontinent. They go somewhere within the GCC, around the region. And they go away, they go and study, and then they come back and they launch their businesses and then they bring more people.
And they're bringing... Someone saying to me, they said there's this generation of people that are going internationally and they're bringing all these learnings back and they're now creating this whole world of business.
Yeah.
You know, Dubai is not just fast cars and glamour.
The problem is the media have been... the mass media has been, I think, responsible for this really...
Nasty, horrible
misconception about Dubai being a one-dimensional city that's, you know, built on
subcontinent laborers. You know what I find interesting about that, though? There is so much self-righticousness in these articles.
Yeah, I know.
And what frustrates me, I read this article maybe about 8 or 9 years ago. It was a journal from, I want to say, the New York Times. I might be wrong, but I think it was the New York Times. And you might remember this. This journalist came into Dubai. He was here for, I think, 12 hours. Basically, what this guy did, he came with his wife and he was completely just, you know, tore Dubai to bits. And he was like, you know, there's no real air in the city. I took the train.
I went to Burj Khalifa, went to the top. Then I went to Dubai Mall, didn't hear the azan, which is a call to prayer. And then I went to the airport, and it's just, it's this commercial place. It's got no culture. It shouldn't be called an Arab country, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There was an Emirati girl, I think doing her master's or a PhD at Manchester University, who drafted the most incredible response to him. And so did Sultan.
Qasimi?
Yeah, Sultan Qasimi. And they basically said, first of all, when you're looking for culture, what is your definition? Why do you get to define what our culture is? Because a culture in an Arab world, you're looking at it from a very Orientalist perspective, that do we have to have souks with spices and bazaars and these kind of things? We have our own independent culture, and it is so unique. And the second thing is, you didn't give Dubai a chance. We have the mountains, we have the beach, we have the city, we have the desert.
You
went to a mall. And you went to the Burj Khalifa, and then you're complaining about only being inside. Well, why didn't you step out? Yeah, why didn't you go to our mosques and museums?
I actually
museums?
Came here. My father lived here for 7 years. So he lived in Hong Kong for over a decade when I was a child. And I actually, when Emirates started, I used to fly to Hong Kong as an unaccompanied minor, and I'd get off the plane in the old Dubai airport. They had selling pirated tapes and CDs and DVDs. And it was not like this. But I never went out. And then he lived here for 7 years and just commuted back. And my stepmother always used to say to other people, she's very savvy, she used to say, don't overthink it. Take Dubai for what it is. Embrace it. It's fairly new and it's changing, and it's actually brilliant. And it was so simple, but so true. And that was, this was her talking 15 years ago. And I came here with my husband for my first trip. This is now my seventh, but I came here the first time and went out of the airport in April. And I was blown away by the culture.
Yeah.
And not just the stuff to do, by the culture and the people and the warmth. And I think you're right. It is such a misconception.
It's a misconception. And there's so
it's
many
got
Dubai's.
Wonderful energy.
2 weeks ago, I was kayaking through mangroves in Ajman. Seeing, you know, flamingos and the most incredible bird life, and it's 37 minutes from my house on a Saturday morning.
We went to Sonora. You know,
through the mangroves.
Oh, Sonora is beautiful. I had my birthday there a few years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I went with my children into the dunes.
We regularly hike with our dogs in the mountains. We're in Wadi Shauka all the time. We drive to Oman, which is just a few hours away. I mean, it's not the life that you think that it is when you read the media. And it's not just the place that is misconstrued, it's the people. You know, there is such a huge misconception, and we see it more so now with what's happening in Gaza than ever before, because it's so stark to everyone in the world now that people really do not understand this region. They don't get it. They don't understand
it. That is why I am so truly so excited to be here, and not just bring our sort of model to the region, but also to connect the regions, because I'm just blown away by the people I met and the energy, and as you said, that so many people here, London is part of their lives, and actually we don't see enough in the media. Anyway, we digress. You came here, you were a lawyer, and fast forward, you opened the edit in
2018. I've lost track. It's been 6 years.
It's been 2018. Let's come back to sort of that point.
Yeah.
Ruth, you've been here 21 years.
Almost.
Sam Safavi, who was in our leading ladies, you must have come at a similar time.
I guess,
Have you seen the video on YouTube of Dubai?
Like a time lapse.
I've seen over the years we've seen many.
So many. It was wild. The buildings. My father said he came back to see some friends, and they went for a drink, and he said, they were in a really lovely hotel on the water, and he said, didn't you used to live around here? And they went, yeah, we used to live under here. And now we're in this huge hotel, and we moved into the hills. And
crazy. When I was in school.
I'm quite a strange expat, though. I've lived in the same house the entire time.
Have you?
Yeah.
Do you own your house here?
No, we don't, because we live right in the middle of Jumeirah. Yeah. So you can't own property in that area.
Right.
But you wouldn't know it now. To come and... I mean,
the house is in Jumeirah.
I have a huge vegetable garden and four dogs, two cats.
I imagine it's an eclectic
It's
joy.
A bit bonkers. Yeah, it's a bit bonkers, my house.
I'm sure it's
home to everyone.
Heaven. Have you seen Nadine Kanze's house?
It's a little bit similar in terms of all the vintage furniture.
I knew you were going to say that. I had a
colour. And,
yeah. I had a much, And so what, 21 years ago, wow.
Yeah, I came out to be an editor on Emirates Woman magazine, which was the very first English
title.
It was actually the first magazine here, really.
Yeah.
Probably coming up for 55 years old now, I guess.
55?
Something like this. Yeah, maybe a bit younger, but yeah, it was the first English title in the Gulf. I have some of the vintage publications from back then, actually, from the very first.
Love that.
So I came out to be an editor on Emirates Woman, and I did that for a few years. And then I launched a magazine for Motivate called Society Dubai Magazine. So I had some great people, great columnists from around the region writing for us. And it was, I guess it was a bit like an ES magazine.
Right.
So you'd have to really be from Dubai and understand Dubai to understand the magazine. So it's quite irreverent, a little bit sort of highbrow, satirical publication. And like Dipesh Tapala was a columnist, for example. We had some great writers, Fatima Gobash, you know, some brilliant, brilliant columnists back then. Real Dubai names. And then I was headhunted by Louis Vuitton. So they were setting up their office here. And I was headhunted to be the first communications director for the region for LV. So yeah, I did that for 7 years before setting up my own agency.
Which is Ruth Bradley.
Consulting. Not Ruth Bradshaw, but I might change it. I'm thinking, that's got a nice ring to it. My dad might get upset though, he never had sons. So, you know.
It's been hugely successful. Your reputation precedes you. So,
I've been in Al Sakal now, coming up for 3 years. It was always my dream to be in there. It's very difficult to get into Al Sakal.
Yeah.
So I think once you're in, and you're in, you've got to protect
it
with your life.
It's like a very exclusive members hub.
You've got a very beautiful showroom. You've got some incredible clients.
Yeah, I love the space. I'm glad you like the space. We wanted it to be very welcoming and very nice, warm and inviting. Thank you. That floor was a nightmare.
Oh, yeah, I hate it.
I saw your stories about it. Oh my God, don't. Yeah, that's the second time we've moved out in less than a year. Wow. To redo the floor.
Wow. And just for people listening, what do you do? You have stunning clients. I mean, Alice Temple being one of them.
Yeah.
What is the role of Ruth Bradley?
I think the best way to sum up what we do, because we work across so many different demographics and, you know, branding, is really we're storytellers. We're there to tell your story within the Middle East. And I think that that's the best way to sum up what we do, because we work across arts, culture, entertainment. You know, there's so many. We're working with artists like El Cid, Lorenzo Quinn, the son of Anthony Quinn, represented by Layla Heller. You know, we represent Al Sakal itself, for example. So, you know, we're doing...
So you're
lots
doing
PR of amazing
comms for that.
Yeah, lots of amazing things within the art world itself. But I would say it's more about reaching communities, because we want to sort of educate the masses really on how many incredible things are happening within this region.
So you operate
not just Dubai. We operate internationally. We operate within the region. So we do a lot in Saudi, in Qatar. We're doing a lot more in Kuwait now. I mean, since the pandemic, obviously Kuwait is becoming a little bit more of an exciting epicenter for luxury again, which is really exciting for them as a country.
And I presume that's a very local market.
Yes. So Doha, for example, Qatar. Qatar, Kuwait, very, very localized markets. So you would find that most of the media for the region is actually based in Dubai since COVID, because they closed down a lot of their offices throughout the region. Lebanon used to have an absolutely thriving media scene. It was incredible. Yeah. Unfortunately, after, you know, not just COVID, but the economy crash and then the explosion, you know, media has all but pretty much finished there. There's a couple hanging on, a couple of independents, but mainly everything now is really focused in Dubai. All your media is here for the region. So that's what makes it such an exciting city to base yourself in if you're doing, you know, work within the Middle East region as a whole. And that's why so many brands are coming here and so many more people are coming here now, in fact.
And what's your view on Saudi? How are they part of the mix? Because they're building their own infrastructure, aren't they?
Well, I actually first went to Saudi in 2019, just after it was really liberalized by incredible women, including Princess Rima Banda Al Saud, who was very, very central to the changes in the country. And... I was there a couple of weeks ago to shoot a campaign as well for one of our clients in Al Ula. And I think that you really see a marked difference now between how open it is as a society, How beautiful Saudi is. I mean, it's just so undiscovered.
It's so undiscovered.
And you say I'm dying to go to Al Ula.
It's incredible. Yeah. I went there. Have you been?
Yes, many
it's
times.
It's amazing.
I went in 2019 when there was nothing there, actually. So before they built all the hotels, I was there just before COVID hit, in fact. And we were all flown in for Fashion Futures by Princess Rima. It was amazing.
If you're a British listener and you don't know Al Ula, spelled U-L-A, check it out. It's
breathtaking.
It's like a grand, edge of the earth.
It's like a Saudi Mars, or like it's kind of like the place in Utah.
But there's also loads of agriculture there because they have the most incredible climates for growing. So they have huge orange groves in Al Ula, loads of different types. They've just had an orange festival there, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, amazing. So...
going back to your business, so PR, comms, and then the showroom as well.
Yeah, we operate a fully-fledged showroom, so brands can put their collections there. So we're really a destination space because everybody knows Al Sakal. Everybody within arts, culture, media, the creative industries. There's a lot of creative industries within that space itself. So
tell me Al Sakal. I've only just got my name wrong because Elaine kept saying... You must go to Al Sakal.
That's great.
Is this a road? Is this a something? And then I arrived first time while we were filming Nadine Kanzo's Leading Ladies episodes. And I was like, where are we? It's a sort of industrial estate. And then I was like, this is quite cool. And it was the Odd Piece and the Gepa and your store.
I think there's around 100 warehouses, maybe.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, between 80 and 100 warehouses.
I've now been a few times.
It's big.
It's a really interesting space.
It's a big space.
But, you know, Al Sakal
started off. It's not what you would think in Dubai, though.
It's very different to what you expect.
It's the first place we took some of our team who came out this trip. I think they were like, oh, this is not what I was
expecting. So the beauty of Al Sakal is that it's not contrived in any way, shape or form.
Exactly.
This is an absolutely organically grown community that has happened over the last 15 years. All completely naturally grown.
A lot of them homegrown.
Yeah. So if you compare it to another, you know, similar entity, because a lot of people do compare entities in Dubai. So if you're going to compare it to DIFC or ICD a lot of people compare it to D3.
It's very
you
different.
Cannot just build things and then that's it. You know, your job is done. Al Sakal has been built from the inside out over many years.
They started off as it was mainly art galleries.
Art galleries.
So 15 years ago, it was just art galleries and like a couple of warehouses for maybe like slightly more industrial things. And then over the past 4 or 5 years, I'm going into my fourth year now at Al Sakal. When I moved in during the pandemic, I was, I think at that point, the only place that did a concept of sorts, like women's wear clothes. And that's also around the time when they started bringing in all these really interesting concepts. Ruth moved in. We've got
a clever move for you.
Oh, what a great move.
Well, you know,
I'm so happy.
It's having sense to you. But how clever that the edit is there and you're in prime position.
It makes so much sense because for the edit, I used to be in Jumeirah on Al Wasl Road, which is also a beautiful area, but it's, you know, it was a standalone villa, so really to drive traffic it's difficult because you're by yourself. There's no community over there. Over the pandemic I spoke to Al Sakal and they're like, you know, we were wondering why didn't you move in here to begin with. And I had this vision of having like a villa. I wanted, you know, women to walk in and feel like they were at home. Did that in Jumeirah. And I was like, okay, I'm ready for Al Sakal now. For me, I would never move into a mall. It was always about being in a very independent, curated space.
Yeah, I mean, you don't belong in a mall.
No, it was perfect. And are the people who come into Al Sakal, because we work around, you know, sustainable brands and empowerment so much, I don't need to educate them about it. They're already very in the know. So it's like a community of people. So depending on whether you're...
It's a giant family, actually.
It's a giant family.
Yeah. For art.
You mentioned Le Guépard. At Christmas, I needed... This is such a random story, but I needed some ramekins because I had 18 people coming for Christmas lunch. And I just called up Sarah.
She's amazing.
And I was like... okay, I need some ramekins because I'm making individual bread and butter puddings. And she lent me 18 ramekins. And then she actually lent me tables because she had loads of tables. So I did this beautiful long table in my vegetable garden.
So if anybody needs to rent anything
I probably
else,
shouldn't advertise that.
Please reach out to Sarah.
I say, it is a family. It's a family.
Yeah. Can I say
all upon anyone within that community?
Yeah, I'm going to have to work really, really hard to get you to like me so they let me in. Can you put a good word, Luke?
We can move a bed into the edit.
Can we have a note for the Gap Hour though? Because I mean, this is a place. So if you've watched our Leading Ladies, if you haven't, then please do. The Nadine Kanzo episode. It's where we go for lunch. And what I loved about it so much was the Fornacetti wallpaper with a ceramic life-size leopard.
Yeah, we've done many events. We've done many events there for our clients.
It's a great space. But also she has these great little vintage and pre-loved pop-ups. So she kind of does a whole bunch of things too. And I feel like in El Zircal, like,
she's great.
Everyone's kind of doing, like, it's not the norm. Everyone's kind of doing these unique things and bringing together craft. And
yeah, it's really creative, isn't it, as a space. You can really feel.
Yeah, you feel the energy.
Do you feel the good energy?
I feel the energy.
So much good energy
100%.
In there.
100%. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about starting a business in Dubai? I have been going through, I've turned my visa this week and my medical, my biometrics.
Oh, you're out of us now.
No, I'm waiting for my Emirates ID card.
I feel like you're going to move here.
Anytime my children are badly behaving, I'm going to be like, so right, funny. I'm going. I am off. I don't have to have my house. I wouldn't say it's easy to set up a business here. It's quite a little process, rightly so. But it's very doable. And I guess as Dubai evolves,
I'm going to challenge you on that because I found it incredibly easy.
Okay, so I'm...
But I'm gonna add an addendum.
Okay. There's process, but they want people basically because Dubai thrives on footfall and people and growing. I was so nervous to sort of someone's gonna think I'm rocking up as this white English girl and who did she, and it's just been so the opposite.
Yeah, it's very welcoming.
So welcoming. Look, the red tape part.
Sometimes they don't make it so simple. This is true. But I found it very, very easy to establish my business. I had never, ever pegged myself as a business owner. I'd always worked for other people. I never thought that I would ever have my own company. It wasn't like it was a dream or something that I yearned to have. Or, you know, that seed was planted for me by a particular person while I was still working in Louis Vuitton. And I'll tell you about that later. But the one thing that made it very simple for me, and I would love to know your thoughts on this, also having set up your own company here, is just ask for help.
Yeah.
There are so many people with so much advice, and all you've got to do is ask. Do a shout out. This is how solid.
It's expats, though, isn't it? My father...
Not even expats. I mean, no, not even
expats. It's everyone,
Everyone.
It's everyone.
Ask for help.
I guess you're all excited to see the region grow.
Do you know what it is? It is easy in terms of it's quick. Once you get the ball rolling, so
and
you
know, with the right help, I think
with the right help, once you understand, you know, like how to go about it or navigate it, people are so helpful here, and then you know, everything went by very smoothly. So, Dubai, I think, and this was
Where would you go now? I mean, I found a PRO via someone.
Yes, I did everything with a PRO. Honestly speaking, I listened to people. I said, how do I do this? What's the easiest way for me to do this?
Yeah.
I wanted to be part of a mainland company. I didn't want to be in a free zone.
Yeah,
because I wanted to be DED. I wanted to give back to the community after so many years of being here. I didn't want to be a free zone company. So for me, that was the first thing. I wanted to be DED. I didn't want to be free zone. And at the time, DED is Department of Economy of Dubai, and which is falls under Dubai tourism.
We have free zones in Dubai, so they're different jurisdictions within Dubai. Yeah. And then the free zones, historically, you could own it without any...
without needing a local partner.
Without needing a local partner.
Which has actually changed anyway.
But it's changed to DED.
I was a service industry anyway, so I didn't need a local partner. I needed a local service agent, someone to sign paperwork, which you don't need to do. Now I'm fully 100% my own, but I was very lucky I had Fatima. The wonderful Fatima Gobash was my first...
That must
my first partner. Having the right PRO is really important. But back then, there had been a ban put on any PR companies being registered under DED because they were trying to clean the market of dodgy PR companies, I guess. So I had Wasta that helped me become registered.
And can to get that's what I meant by the help.
Yeah.
Can Wasta be a PRO?
No.
So
Wasta is a person.
It's an influential person.
Yeah. It just needs to be somebody that can get something done.
Get shit done.
Look, Dubai is a city, and I would say even tomorrow, to an extent, the UAE is a country where anything is possible.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Anything is possible. Anything at all. You want to meet someone, you can meet them. You want to do something, you can do it. You want to be a TV presenter
and
tomorrow,
can
you
say,
can become
this
one.
Is what?
This is where dreams are made.
This is real. Like, that is real.
Yeah.
And that is what, and you know, I know our Middle East audience that we're growing will be listening to this, but I also know our UK audience will be listening to this, and an international audience that finds this on YouTube, and that is it. It is, you know, you can make it happen, you can make it happen.
But the thing is, a lot of expats come here and they don't become a part of the community. They don't, or they become part of a very
tight little bubble,
let's call it stereotypical expat community. Yeah.
Dubai, I see it as like a person. Dubai is like a living, breathing person who probably started off, you know, in infancy, you know, getting to grips with growing up and then going through maybe a bit of a rebellious stage where we weren't attracting the right crowd of people. Mm. And I feel like now since the pandemic, Dubai is a very confident 30 or 40 year old woman who is very settled
in
who she is, but is also expanding and growing and becoming more open and accepting. So it's a place that's constantly developing and growing and learning.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the red tape, and that does exist, probably will always exist in setting up anything anywhere.
And so it should everywhere, really. But otherwise you get every wave straight.
But if you have a problem, and WPS is an example. In the early days, I didn't know what WPS was, and I was
WPS?
It stands for wage protection system. It's linked in the bank system to their labor card,
right?
So that whatever contract you've got that your staff on matches what it is that they're being paid, and it's to protect staff. And to make sure they get paid, actually. But I didn't know what this was. So in the early days, I think we got a ban on visas or something, and I was like, why? And the PRO said, oh, because you're not doing them through WPS.
Yeah.
And I was in this building at the time. And I'd become friends with a really lovely British Pakistani guy downstairs that ran an IT company. And I just happened to mention it in Tom and Serge over coffee. Oh, you know, I don't know anything about WPS. And he helped me through the whole thing. So that's what I'm saying. When you have a good community of people around you, anything can be fixed.
I do think, though, I mean, Dubai is largely expats. It might be 11% now. But actually, as I mentioned earlier, my father lived in Hong Kong when I was a child. And that is the magic also of being an expat, is that people come in and you welcome them with open arms. It's also part of the culture here.
Yeah.
I do think it's also part of being an expat. And that's,
I mean, no, so the expat community is not 11%. The expat
it's
community
huge.
Is 89%. No, the Emirati. Yeah, the Emirati. Yeah.
And out of that 89%, subcontinent is probably at least 70 of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ladies, can we have I'm aware of you got to go and hang out with the special person.
Cry a little bit.
Crying in.
Yeah.
Before we finish,
it's sufficient.
Some words of wisdom as two brilliantly successful, respected women in the city. Any words of wisdom, advice to other people, other entrepreneurs, budding entrepreneurs?
I would say do it. There's nothing better than running your own company and being your own boss. And if you think that, like, I'm doing it in a country that's not even mine, I mean, I feel very much adopted by the UAE. I feel this is my home. I've been here such a long time. And I think that the two biggest pieces of advice that I would give to anybody wanting to do this, especially if you're an expat, is really open up your community, because you need to have a community. If you don't know what it is, you need to know what it
that's
is.
Such good advice.
You can't not be a community-minded person.
Yeah.
And the second would be ask advice. Ask for help all the time to anyone, because people really do genuinely want to give it.
I think that. I often say that. I think you'd be amazed how many people who've been there themselves and had it, give it back. And if you don't ask, you don't get it.
And I think if you're in Dubai, I guess the advice that I would give my advice in Dubai would be very different to my advice to a woman anywhere else in the world. But Dubai is so, we're so keen and so eager for new innovation, for things that are happening. And there's so much women empowerment over here. Like, we love seeing women thrive. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that you're thinking about doing, do it. I mean, obviously do your due diligence, make sure it's a business model that actually works. But if you really believe in it, ask for help, ask for advice, and go ahead and do it, because Dubai is so receptive to things that are new and novel and innovative.
But you also need to know your audience.
You need to know your audience.
So many people just don't know their audience. And that's their first mistake, I think.
Ladies, thank you. Girls around the world, I mean, nowhere more so than in the GCC, I would say, seeing it more and more. It's really freaking cool.
Yeah.
That's really
As cool. are you two.
We're very happy to have you here.
Thank you.
It's very exciting.
I appreciate that and your time and your brilliant energy. Thank you so much for listening. That's it for today. If you enjoyed that, then please do tell your friends to listen too. We will be back soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.